Sacramento.
Glory, glory, Sacramento.
Roro with the goal.
Roro's going to take a shot. Oh, my. Do you believe it?
Cameron Nwassa charging forward, looking for a team to strike on distance. And it rattles in. Cameron Nwassa, the Sacramento kid.
That it was less about if and more about when Sacramento was going to join Major League Soccer. Well, folks, when is today? Your when has arrived.
Welcome in to another episode of Rise of the Republic. I am here with my co-host, as always, Mr. Blake Marquez. How are you doing, Blake?
Doing good. Thanks, Rich.
Awesome. And we also have a special guest with us tonight, Alicia Rodriguez. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks very much for having me on.
So we wanted to start off by just asking you a little bit about what it is that you do, because I know you can wear a lot of hats at times, and you certainly have a lot of experience covering many soccer teams in California specifically, I believe, but let me just go ahead and let you answer the question. What are all the teams that you are covering right now?
Get a pen ready. No, I'm just kidding. I cover basically the soccer teams in California for SB Nation for several sites, including Indomitable City Soccer, obviously for Sacramento Republic. And then I also cover the San Jose Earthquakes, LA Galaxy, LAFC. And then I do some additional USL coverage. So I also cover LA Galaxy 2, Orange County SC, take a look in on some of the other teams around. But those, let's see, that, what, six or seven, that's my main, those are my main beats in the California soccer world right now.
And what's the hardest part of covering so many teams? Is there any specific thing, or is it just a lot of juggling that you've kind of gotten used to over the time?
Well, it's been a weird year, as we all know. So, there's been a lot of downtime and then a lot of time when there's a ton of games. I'd say generally it's a lot of fun. And, you know, if you have a team that maybe is struggling a little bit, then you can, you know, look forward to covering a team that's winning a lot. And, you know, like there's variety, which is, it's really nice. I'd say basically the biggest challenge is allocating time and trying to, you know, make sure I'm doing the best job I can for all the various teams, because I want to, you know, do a really good job covering everyone. And, you know, some days are better than others, obviously. Sometimes, you just kind of run out of time. But, I have a lot of fun doing it. And, if there were more hours in the day, I would be writing more stories. But, you know, this is what we have to work with.
That's awesome. Yeah, I sometimes see your tweets and it'll be like, X number of games left to go this week, and it's a number that is just a little bit astounding at times. That's really cool, though, and I know, so obviously there's Indomitable City on the SB Nation side of things, but just going off that list, is there any other USL teams that have a bespoke SB Nation site?
No, not right now. We started Indomitable City Soccer. I helped with the launch of the site. I believe it was back in 2016 we launched the site. And I think partly we knew that the fan base was really engaged and excited about the team. And I also think that we thought there was a really good chance they were going to end up in MLS one day. And, it hasn't happened yet, but so it's expected to happen. They've obviously gotten approval to enter MLS. So, Sac Republic is a little bit unique in that regard. But, as I've gotten to cover, because I've been watching Sacramento Republic since they started play back in 2014. But this is the first year that I've really covered the team, day to day. And even I've been really impressed with how you know, just how into it the fans are of this team and how much they support, and also the expectations being really high surrounding the team, which I think is a good thing, because that, you know, keeps the club on their toes and make sure that they're putting out a good, good product every year. And so far they've been doing that. So yeah, I'm really impressed with the fan base, and yeah, it's been a fun ride so far.
I see you in the press conferences after the games. Is that happen ever where you're juggling back and forth between two games that ended simultaneously and you have to hop into multiple conferences?
Yeah, yes, that is a modern inconvenience. Typically what I have to do is just pick a press conference, because the last thing I want is to have audio bleeding over from one to the other, and, you know, trying to record, or, you know, having my mic pick up something from another, you know, all that kind of disaster. So usually what I do is I pick a press conference and hope that I get the best stuff out of it, or, you know, it may be a team that is not as good about getting the materials out post game. So that makes the decision easy for me. But for me, as somebody who works remotely, you know, again, covering all these teams in California in the era of coronavirus, obviously I'm not going, you know, traveling all around the state game to game. I'm doing it from home. So it's really nice to have the opportunity to participate in press conferences through Zoom, and get to ask questions and stuff post game. And, you know, that I think for someone like me and in kind of a unique circumstance, it's been a lot of fun, because I've been able to participate in a way that I probably wouldn't if the world were a little bit more normal, frankly. But yeah, it's been good.
You had talked, we've been talking about how you're covering so many teams. You have about six teams, give or take a few, and how you might have to make some tough decisions when it comes to juggling these press conferences and paying attention to different games and stuff like that. I kind of want to give you a tougher decision in more of the soccer realm here. With Sacramento moving up into the MLS very soon, and even more additions going into the USL from in the California area, where would you put the Sacramento Republic in rankings if you had to throw all the soccer teams in Sacramento? Where would they be?
Are you talking about in terms of the team, in terms of the fan base, the whole package? Like, what do you mean?
Let's do the whole package, but I'm also very interested in the team quality itself competitively.
So let me think about it for a second. I would say a whole package. Sacramento, you know, the Papa Murphy's Park is a good stadium for what they have right now and kind of the level that they're at. But when they get into MLS, they'll need to have a more modern stadium set up, and they're obviously working towards that. So aside from the stadium, I would put them probably third behind, overall fan base, like, importance to the local market, that kind of thing, quality of the team, performance overall. I'd put them actually ahead of the Earthquakes, because the Earthquakes, I think, they've had a lot of down years, and they have a pretty good coach right now, but the results really aren't there, and they're not spending a lot on the team and that kind of thing. As far as the quality of the play, I would put them, you know, I think there are nights that they would definitely be able to beat any of the MLS teams, but I think probably on balance at this stage, the MLS teams, you know, all three of them would probably consistently, you know, get the upper hand on Sacramento. I still think that there is a gap between the USL Championship and MLS, generally speaking, when it comes to the, you know, roster quality and that kind of thing. But I definitely think that they have the quality to beat an MLS team. You know, we've seen them in the Open Cup in recent years, bring an upset or two on MLS teams, and if not, play them pretty close. It's going to be really interesting when they get to MLS, how they build a roster and how they get you know, aim to be competitive in moving up, because a lot of other expansion teams, MLS expansion teams, have struggled at that over the years. So that's something I'm really looking forward to seeing kind of how they approach it, and what, obviously, whether or not it works in the end.
That's really interesting. I am someone who is fascinated by how different teams from different leagues would stack up against one another. As someone who's just getting into soccer in their kind of first year of really watching and following and writing about soccer, podcasting about soccer, it's kind of a, you know, it's a different world for me coming from like a sport where it's really the one league that matters, I guess you could say, quote unquote, matters. Like there are people that want to figure out, you know, if the French league versus the German league and the basketball leagues are comparable or which one is better, what have you. But for the most part, it's the NBA and that's the end of it. So it's interesting to hear about the Republic potentially, you know, being good enough to beat MLS teams any night, depending on the night. I'm curious, like, are there any particular players that stand out on this Republic team to you where, you know, you wouldn't bat an eye if they were on the Earthquakes roster? I know, like, the Galaxy are a very successful team in the MLS. But, I mean, you know, just looking at some of the players on this team, and maybe we can account into their age a little bit and their trajectory, but are there – some players that stand out as like, okay, this is an MLS quality player?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I would say for me right now, Hayden Sargis is the one who is kind of the standout, just because he's in his first year as a professional. He's basically a starter every week. He's looked like he belongs at this level right away. So I could see him, if he continues to grow, I can definitely see him, you know, be an established starter in MLS in the years to come pretty easily. Beyond that, I think there's a lot of talent on Sacramento Republic's team, but a lot of the guys that are on the roster have had a cup of coffee with MLS teams, and, you know, most of them it just didn't work out for whatever reason. You know, the likes of Cam Awasa, Villian Bijev, Tomas Hilliard Arce, Rodrigo Lopez, you know, even he way back when had a stint in MLS. So there's a lot of guys who have gotten a look, and just, you know, I think there are definitely players in USL who are probably good enough to play in MLS, and they just don't ever get a chance. And, you know, that's really unfortunate. You know, occasionally every year or two, there's a player who gets signed to an MLS team and he really breaks out. Like, for example, Mark Anthony Kay at LAFC, he was signed from Louisville City, and people were sort of like, oh, that's interesting. You know, what is he going to be, a depth player or something? And he's started pretty much every game he's been available for since LAFC entered MLS. So, there's definitely those diamonds in the rough, no question about it. But for me right now, off the top of my head, I would say that Hayden is the one who really stands out as a good prospect, and, you know, potentially somebody who not only would his ceiling be MLS, but maybe even going to Europe and going to possibly a bigger league over there one day, again, if his trajectory kind of continues to be on an upward swing like it is.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know one point of reference for myself has been looking at 538, which is a really fun site for sports predictions and analytics, that sort of thing. And I don't know how much to put into it, but for whatever reason, I really enjoyed looking at their world club rankings. And I just want to run some of these past you and see if they kind of strike you in any way, or if you would agree or disagree with where they kind of rank the Republic. They put them the 34th best team in the USA, which is better than two MLS teams, and ninth best in the USL. Does that like feel about right to you?
Probably more or less. I think you could make a case maybe they'd be a little bit higher relative to the other USL teams. I definitely think that they're like, I think there's a contender pool in the USL Championship, and I think they're obviously a part of that pool. But it's a matter of like how big is that group? Because obviously the USL Championship is kind of growing and growing and growing. You know, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Like when I started covering USL, there was like 9 teams, and there's almost 40 now, I think, in that particular league. So, you know, if you're saying like they're 8th or 9th best in that group, I'd say maybe they're a little bit higher, maybe, you know, 5th or 6th. But generally speaking, yeah, I would say that sounds about right to me. You know, it's all on paper, obviously. So, and that's one of the fun things about soccer is, you know, you look on paper and say, well, this team's obviously going to beat this team. And then you never know what's actually going to happen when they step out on the field. But yeah, I'd say, you know, kind of broad strokes wise, I guess that sounds about right.
With this announcement of us, of the Sacramento Republic moving into the MLS in the next 3 years or so, hopefully more or less, what are some key moves that you think the Sacramento Republic will have to make to become a force in there? Not necessarily start dominating, but be competitive, not necessarily pulling something that we see a lot of these former USL teams where they are stuck really far at the bottom of the table the first couple years. Are there any solid moves that you think the Sacramento Republic will have to pull off to be competitors in that at the next level?
Yeah, I think there's 3 main prongs to building a good expansion team. And obviously it sounds really easy, but, you know, clearly it's not easy to do. But I think the first one is to make sure you have the right coach. Some teams, you know, keep the same coach that they had in USL and it works out relatively well. And others change their coach when they're moving up. And, you know, sometimes that works out well, sometimes it doesn't. So I think that's the first one is making sure you have somebody who's actually prepared for the level and who can kind of work through the ups and downs of an expansion season. You know, for like a team like, let's take Orlando City, you know, they were absolutely dominant in USL and then they came to MLS and I think they were a little bit caught off guard as to how hard it was going to be to adjust to MLS. And I think that's a really good lesson for, even though it's been a few years, I think it's a really good lesson for Sacramento Republic. The second one is to, you know, make sure you get some good hits on your designated players. And I don't think the TAM category is going to exist by the time Sacramento Republic enters, but the equivalent of that, sort of your sub DP players, but you know, players you still have to spend some money on. If you go super cheap or if you go really expensive, but you get the wrong players, you know, if you just don't get the right fit for those kind of marquee signings, even if they're not necessarily like household names, you still got to make sure that you get guys who can contribute and again, sort of understand the project and understand, that they're going to be expected to deliver right away, but also that they have to weather maybe some ups and downs along, you know, along that first season or two. And then the third part, I think, would be to make sure that you're stocking your roster with enough experience. Otherwise, you know, beyond just the big name players. So, you know, I've seen a few different approaches to doing this, and some teams go really heavy on like conducting trades around MLS, and sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't work out as well. Other teams have gone kind of more of a variety approach where they'll get a few guys who are experienced around MLS, trade for them, you know, get a few experienced hands, you know, from South America, Europe, that kind of thing. Again, maybe you get a couple players from, you know, a lower division or the Canadian Premier League, you know, like you look and kind of make sure that no stone is left unturned as you're trying to build a good core to get you started. But to me, those are kind of the 3 main points is making sure you have the right coach, getting those good DPs and, you know, TAM or whatever equivalent players, and then making sure that you have the experience to kind of start strong, and if you have any dips to weather them as well as you can. I think in that regard, this season, Nashville SC has done a pretty good job with that third point. You know, they have a lot of players who have prior MLS experience, and obviously 2020 is a very weird year, and I don't think you can kind of grade the expansion teams this year on the same curve as you normally would. But I think in that particular regard, Nashville's done a really good job of making sure that they have experienced guys to kind of set the tone for the team.
Again, as someone who's just getting introduced into soccer, could you go into a little bit about what those terms were you used? I when I hear TAM and like sub DP, so I'm assuming DP is the designated player thing, but could you get into what those terms mean?
Yeah, for sure. So designated player is sort of like your superstar like level player. So it started with David Beckham at the LA Galaxy. You know, he was the person that really ushered in the rule and started the era of designated players. And you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a player who everyone knows of. Many teams will sign players based on that basis, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But they're basically, you know, regarded as the players that are going to be the stars of the team, the leaders doing, you know, most of the media work and, you know, the being on the billboards and having their jerseys sold and that sort of thing, but also contributing obviously on the field. And then TAM player is kind of the, like a step just below that. So players who maybe are, you know, within the tightly constricted salary cap realm of MLS, which is unusual from most other soccer leagues in the world. A TAM player is somebody who you still might pay a transfer fee for, you still might pay a good chunk of money, relatively speaking, but they're not quite on the same level as the designated player. And that gives teams a little more flexibility to be able to buy a few more stars, or, you know, maybe some younger players who are on the rise who may become stars one day. You know, sometimes they're signed as TAM players, and then they become, you know, they get transferred on for profit down the line, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's sort of like DPs are sort of the superstars. TAM players are often kind of the tier just below that. And there's a few other categories, but suffice it to say, the rest of the guys are, for the most part, the rest of the squad, basically, on an MLS roster.
Gotcha. And are these, like, league ascribed roles? Is it, you know, is each team allowed, like, a certain number of each or certain spending on each? Or is this sort of terminology just used to refer to the players?
Yeah, so designated players, teams get three at a time. You don't have to have all three, but, you know, if you want to compete, most teams do. And then TAM players are a little bit different. It's you get like a fund, basically. So you have a certain amount of money to spend, and you could sign. I mean, I don't know what the limit would be, but, you know, theoretically speaking, you could sign five players using TAM money, or you could sign two players using TAM money. It's just a matter of how much of the, you know, the pool of money that you have available to spend on those players, how you allocate that. So so there's no set number necessarily tied to TAM players like there is for designated players. It's more kind of a, you know, fund that you can dip into if you want to sign those players.
Interesting. And then to go back to something you were saying earlier in the three-pronged approach, you mentioned the need for a good coach, an MLS level coach. What is your read on Mark Briggs? He is, you know, it was not hard to notice that his original contract went up until the original date for the MLS expansion. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it was there and I noticed it. You know, what's your read on the job that he's done or the job you think he's capable of doing with this squad and potentially on the next level?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, I think, again, this year's been so weird. It's kind of hard to, you know, really get a good beat on how players, teams, coaches are doing just because things are so weird right now. But I think he's done a pretty good job so far. But I also think that the standards for Sacramento Republic are high. And so if they don't make a deep run in the playoffs this year, it's going to be a disappointment. You know, if he's able to do a good job with Sacramento Republic up until his contract runs out or whatever, I think he's definitely a candidate. But he's never coached at MLS level before. And most of his familiarity with, you know, with American soccer is at the USL level in particular. Having said that, I think, you know, he's a young guy, he's somebody who's ambitious. So could I see him, you know, moving up to MLS with the club? Definitely. But will it happen? You know, we'll see. I think a lot of it will depend on like who they sign as designated players and that kind of thing too. I would expect that they'll sign a DP 6 months to a year before the team actually comes together for MLS. So that'll give us a good hint of kind of the direction the team's going in for MLS. But yeah, it's all really speculative right now. So I don't really have a good answer, but you know, we'll have to wait and see how kind of the team does now. And then in the buildup, sort of the moves that they make and whether or not it looks like, you know, he's going to be in contention or not.
To get back to the USL side of things, you know, based on how you had ranked the teams in performance or, you know, on the pitch quality of product, it sounds like you probably have this group of teams fighting for the second spot in Group B, maybe a little bit lower than Sacramento. But I wanted to get your opinion on this group of teams that are still very much in a tight race for that second playoff spot. Obviously you have seen a lot of them and just wondering who your pick would be to come out of that group. LA Galaxy 2 seems to have a slight edge in terms of points and games remaining, but San Diego Loyal on a bit of a hot streak and Orange County in the mix as well.
Yeah, I would say, I'd say first of all that Sacramento Republic are really pretty fortunate with how the groups shook out. Not because I don't believe that they're a good team, but just their group is so much easier, frankly, than Group B. I mean, Group B is like a murderer's row, and Group A was, you know, no disrespect to Reno or Tacoma and Portland, but I mean, they just are not at the same level as Reno and Sacramento, and so it was kind of a cakewalk for those two independent teams. In contrast, Group B is just, I mean, I honestly think that like four teams could make the playoffs from, like they're that good that they could make the playoffs from Group B, and obviously two of them are going to be disappointed. So, yeah, I think to me, watching the teams pretty closely in both groups, I would say that I think Orange County and Sac Republic are pretty closely matched. I think if they played 10 times, the record would be pretty even between the teams. I think they're built pretty similarly. They have the same track record. They have the same kind of profile of players with a sustained level of success with the respective teams. So I think they're pretty even. I think LA Galaxy 2 is a team that pretty much nobody knew what to expect this year. You know, they tend to play very young players, a lot of players out of the academy, but then you have the situation where the academy shut down. I mean, the academy itself didn't shut down, but the seasons shut down, you know, the whole development academy program shut down. And there was the, you know, coronavirus shut down. And typically MLS2 teams get a lot of players from the MLS first team to help out with USL games. But this season's been unusual because you know, sort of for quarantine reasons and for logistical reasons, the teams are not sending players back and forth as much. So like the Galaxy 2 have had really no help from the first team this year. And the same goes for Tacoma and Timbers 2. You know, they haven't been getting any help either from their MLS teams. So, you know, we've seen with Tacoma and Portland, obviously they've struggled a lot because they can't draw upon, you know, a player working up to match fitness after coming back from an injury, or a young prospect who needs some playing time and, you know, needs some games. And so he goes down to the USL team. They're not getting that help. Well, neither is Galaxy 2, but their group is strong enough that they really don't need that. So I thought they were, you know, if they started off okay, I thought they were going to do pretty well in the restart, and they've done, I think, even better than I expected. And I was, I think, one of the few people who thought that they might have a chance to compete in the group. They're still young, so, you know, anything can happen, but I definitely believe that they kind of have the cohesion and enough consistency to compete for a playoff spot. And I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they make the playoffs. And then for San Diego, they're a first year team. So you really don't know what to expect with them. I think they sort of saw this summer that they were lacking a little bit. They were starting to drop off in the standings a little bit. And so they signed a bunch of pretty intriguing players. They got Alejandro Guido on loan from LAFC. They signed Rubio Rubin, who used to be a prospect, a U.S. national team prospect who was playing in Europe and was kind of seen as the next big thing, and things didn't really come together for him. But, you know, for a USL level, like, that's a big coup of a signing. And those guys have come to reinforce a pretty experienced squad for an expansion team. So personally, I think that they're probably on the outside looking in compared to Orange County and Galaxy 2, just based on how those teams are made up. But I definitely think it's a three-team race for that second place in Group B, and any of them are capable of getting it. And again, I, having watched the group really closely, I really believe that four teams could have made the playoffs from that group. So it's going to be pretty heartbreaking for whichever two teams don't end up getting that last spot.
Gotcha. To get into the playoff matchups, because obviously Group A is squaring off with Group B, I wanted to run through a couple of the scenarios. The first one, let's just say for a minute, even though Reno just won tonight and now is 3 points ahead of Sacramento, let's say for a minute that Sacramento wins the group and they get one of those three teams you just discussed coming to Sacramento to play in the first round with home field advantage and all that. Would you feel pretty good about Sacramento's chances? Or, I mean, would you call them a favorite, a pretty clear favorite in that scenario?
I definitely would say they're favored in that scenario, probably against all three teams, but I think they would be probably pretty big favorites against San Diego. I think it would be closer to a push against Orange County, you know, like slight edge to Sacramento. And then again, Los Dos is kind of a wild card, but I think that game, and, you know, the rivalry with Galaxy 2 goes all the way back to 2014. You know, I think that game could be really, really tight. Sort of the experience and the lofty aims of Sacramento Republic going up against this kind of upstart Galaxy 2 team where, you know, frankly, almost no one in America knows who plays on the team. You know, like, there's no like, oh, that guy's going to be a star. It's a bunch of really good players. And I think there'll probably be a few guys who end up on the first team in LA at some point, but you know, not a team where they're getting a ton of press and a lot of attention, but very wily. So, you know, Sacramento would be favored, but personally, if I were to put money on that one, I would think pretty hard about, you know, how much money I was going to spend. Let's put it that way.
That's interesting. And then to contrast that with the other scenario, which would be going to Phoenix, traveling to to a team that's perfect at home on the season. And that's, you know, I'm going to be leaning on my 538, that analysis there, but 538 loves Phoenix. And I know they have a great reputation just in general too, but they have them as the clear best team in the USL. I think they, if you look at the World Club list and compare them to MLS teams, they would be the eighth best MLS team on that list. They definitely have them as prohibitive favorites to come out of the West by a lot and the number one favorite to win it all. First of all, you know, how do you feel about Phoenix? You know, is that too much praise for them or, you know, just about enough? And then how would you, you know, I mean, is this the nightmare scenario for Sacramento in round one?
So I would say that Phoenix is definitely the favorite in the West. That I think that's pretty much undisputed. However, I don't think that they're as invincible as they were last year. I think there's been a handful of results where you're like, okay. You know, they can get got. So I think that gives a little bit of hope to opposing teams, especially when it comes to the playoffs, that you're not necessarily going to run into a juggernaut. You know, there's a little bit of hope for any team that goes there. I would definitely say that I think them being ranked the eighth best team, like on MLS terms, is way too high, way, way too high. You know, I have a lot of respect for Phoenix, and I think they've put together a really good team, but that's way, way too high. So yeah, I think that they're definitely the favorites in the West. Pretty much, I think the path to the, you know, the final in the West goes through them for sure. But having said that, I think were Sacramento to have to go there and play them, it's not going to be an easy game. They're not going to be favored, but seeing that they haven't been quite as perfect this year as they were last year, you know, last year's regular season was almost flawless for Phoenix. There's been a few more cracks this year. So that has to give a team like Sacramento hope that they definitely can, you know, can spring an upset, and they've won on the road in the playoffs recently themselves. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't show up expecting to get whipped, because I think that they definitely would have a chance in that game.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're certainly right that on any night, any team can kind of do anything to a certain extent. But I want to hold your feet to the fire a little bit here as we're wrapping up the podcast and ask you for some predictions. And I understand that that's a little uncomfortable for reporters at times who want to stay away from speculation or whatever, but I would really enjoy to get a prediction from you about how Sacramento will end the season with the four games remaining, who you would, you know, if you could make a guess at how their playoff run either ends or maybe doesn't end, you know, I mean, do they, you know, I'm specifically kind of thinking about this quadrant, this group A, group B quadrant of the bracket, but yeah, I mean, how do they wrap up the season and how far do they go in the playoffs?
Well, I think, there's four games left to play. I think they have a pretty favorable schedule ahead. You know, the Reno game is going to be the big one. Obviously, they can't, you know, go with a letdown against the likes of Tacoma or Portland, you know, in these final games. But the Reno one's the big one, because that's basically going to decide the group, most likely. So that's going to be a showdown. You know, the pole position is with Reno right now, but Sacramento's just played Reno so well this season that I just have a feeling that they can pip them and get first place in the group. You know, and obviously if they do that, then the road is a little bit easier in the playoffs. But again, it's going to be really interesting. And, you know, I don't mean to sidestep the question, but it's going to be really interesting when we see the Group A and Group B teams square off in the playoffs, because, you know, I think Group B has had a much tougher run than Group A. I mean, again, I think, you know, Sacramento's had a really pretty easy schedule. That's not to say they're not a good team, but they've just had a much more favorable schedule than the teams in Group B. So is it going to be a matter of the Group A teams being fresh because they haven't had to really push themselves, you know, every week in that way? Or is Group B going to be a little bit more battle tested and able to, you know, able to overcome the Group A teams pretty easily? I don't know. You know, at this point, I don't know. Like, that's the big thing that I've been kind of pondering. But it's one of those things where we have to see what happens when the matchups come out and kind of how the teams finish the season, how their form is coming in, that kind of thing. But, you know, with the playoffs wrapped up right now, I don't expect that Reno and Sacramento are going to take their foot off the pedal. But you never know. You know, it may be a unconscious thing where they say, okay, we're in, and then they start dropping points. And that's going to be really bad for them if they do that right before the postseason. But again, it may be a matter of they're a little bit more fresh. They possibly can avoid injuries, hopefully, and that may make the difference. And we may see when it comes to the playoffs that it actually won't be quite as lopsided as it looked during the regular season. So yeah, again, I'm not trying to avoid the question, but yeah, I have a lot of questions at this point. So I want to reserve judgment a little bit until we get close to those matchups, and then we can kind of have fun breaking it down before the games actually kick off.
I just gotta press one more time, just because this might be our only chance to have someone with so much experience looking at all these teams. Just your gut, you know, doesn't need to be analysis. Just your gut right now. Does it feel like Sacramento is going to make a deep run in this playoffs?
Gut says probably not. I really think Group B is really deep, but you know, again, I definitely think they're in the contender pool. So, you know, they're one of that group of four or five teams that I think can win the West. So I certainly wouldn't count them out, but you know, at this moment in mid-September, I'd say it's going to be tough, but yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Alicia, for joining us. I just want to make sure everyone knows where they can read you. It's a lot of places, so maybe you can help out, but I know I can first say on Twitter at Soccer Musings, and what are some of the websites that people can go to read you?
Yeah, sure. Soccer Musings is probably the easiest way to you know, find me quickly. But if you want to read my work directly, you can go to indomitablecitysoccer.com for Sacramento Republic coverage. You can go to Centerline Soccer for San Jose Earthquakes coverage. LAG Confidential for LA Galaxy and Galaxy 2 coverage. Angels on Parade for LAFC and Orange County SC coverage. So a lot of sites, but I tend to promote links and whatnot. So if you find me on Twitter, then you'll probably be on the right track.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries.